A production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Is that better? All right. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. As the Attorney General said, my name is Scott Swear. I'm the assistant, one of the assistant attorney generals and the Director of Legislative Affairs for the AG. And again, we'd like to thank you for the invitation to come and talk with you this morning. For the next 20 or 25 minutes, we really have two principal objectives that we'd like to share with you. Number one is we want to give you an overview of the office, what we do and who we are. Second objective that we have this morning is to talk about two pieces of recent legislation that was passed by the legislature. One of the pieces of legislation was passed last year, which is known as Katie's Law. We're going to talk about that and bring you up to date on that law. And as the Attorney General said, the other piece of legislation, which was enacted a couple years ago, is the Attorney General's 24/7 sobriety program. So those are our two objectives this morning. We'll see if the new technology works. All right, we're off to a good start. The Office of the Attorney General has three fundamental purposes. Number one is we provide legal services to the state, state agencies, and the departments in the state. Our second purpose is to provide consumer protection for the people of South Dakota. And our third fundamental purpose is that the Attorney General is actually the top law enforcement officer in the state of South Dakota. So those are our office's three fundamental purposes. Some fast facts real quickly. We have 35 lawyers in our office. We have 45 Division of Criminal Investigation, or DCI, agents. The DCI comes under the auspices of the Attorney General. Total, the Attorney General's office has 146 employees, a budget of just under $21 million. And as a little trivia, we are the smallest Attorney General's office in the United States. Our office is made up of six legal sections. The appellate section, natural resources and civil litigation, criminal litigation, drug prosecution, consumer protection, and Medicaid fraud. And we're going to talk briefly about each of those sections so you know exactly what they do. The first section is the appellate section. It has three primary roles. The first role is that we do all criminal appeals to the South Dakota Supreme Court. So if a local state's attorney or a defendant appeal a criminal matter to the South Dakota Supreme Court, it's our office who reviews the file, who researches the legal issues, and who ultimately files the legal brief and makes the arguments before the South Dakota Supreme Court. That's obviously a huge part of our appellate division, is doing all of these criminal appeals. Our appellate division also engages in habeas corpus proceedings. If someone believes that they are incarcerated here in South Dakota in violation of their constitutional rights, they can bring what's called a habeas corpus proceeding. Our appellate division, for the most part, engages in defending the state in those habeas corpus proceedings. And finally, post-conviction DNA testing. Again, if we have a defendant who believes that DNA that was not tested or was not properly tested may exonerate that person, our appellate division, again, handles the defense of the state in those post-conviction DNA matters. Our second division is the natural resources civil litigation section. This section provides specialized legal counsel to state agencies and departments. Just a few of the agencies and departments that we represent or that we provide legal services to are the Departments of Agriculture, Education, the Environment, various financial issues that may come up with the state. Also, this section engages in Indian law practice, natural resources, and tobacco enforcement. Tobacco enforcement is primarily we have attorneys who are in charge of enforcing the state's master settlement agreement with the national tobacco companies. That's obviously a huge role in our office to make sure that that master settlement agreement is indeed enforced as it should be under the agreement. Our third section is the criminal litigation section. This is the section that most of you are probably most familiar with. excuse me. This is the section that prosecutes major felonies throughout the state. Murders, manslaughters, rapes, high-profile major felonies such as this. You may have seen in the news that we just completed a first-degree murder case out of the Highmore area, where we had the former Highmore police chief was found guilty of murdering his wife. Our criminal litigation section tried that case successfully, and obviously that was a decision that we were very proud of and very satisfied with. The criminal litigation section also assists county state's attorneys. For instance, if Representative Gibson's area, Beadle County, if the Beadle County state's attorney would request our assistance in a major felony case, we are happy to go in and to assist and to act as lead counsel with that local state's attorney to bring the resources and the experience of our office to the benefit of the counties. Our criminal litigation section also prosecutes multi-county criminal offenses. We also prosecute any criminal offenses that occur in the state penitentiary, whether that be assaults, inmate-on-inmate assaults, inmate-on-guard assaults, things like that. But any type of criminal offense in the state penitentiary is also prosecuted by our criminal litigation section. Our fourth section is the drug prosecution section. Obviously, this prosecutes drug-related crimes throughout the state. A couple quick numbers. In fiscal year 2008, the prosecution section prosecuted 222 drug-related offenses. Also initiated in fiscal year 2008, 167 civil forfeiture cases. And finally, our drug prosecution section also provides extensive training to local state law enforcement. For those of you who have been to the Mickelson Center, we have an incredible facility in which to provide law enforcement training. And our drug prosecution section is extremely important in providing that training to our law enforcement officers who are on the street. Our fifth section is our consumer protection section. Consumer protection investigates, mediates, and litigates consumer fraud cases in the state. In 2007, these are the most current numbers we have as of right now, the consumer protection section received 16,200 phone calls from South Dakota residents, received around 2,500 email inquiries. And in 2007, the consumer protection section opened almost 2,500 case files. The section is also heavily involved in providing consumer education to residents of South Dakota. In 2008, and again, this is something that you may have seen through the media, our consumer protection division recovered over $4 million for victims in South Dakota of deceptive or unfair trade practices. That's obviously a section that gets a lot of bang for the buck, so to speak. That $4 million amount is something that we're obviously very pleased with. And finally, our sixth section is the Medicaid fraud section. This section investigates and prosecutes Medicaid fraud cases. Recovered $1.8 million in 2008. This section investigates and prosecutes residential abuse and neglect cases, primarily against the elderly and disabled of our state. The section also investigates and prosecutes financial exploitation, once again, primarily of the elderly and disabled residents of our state. As I indicated earlier, under the auspices of Attorney General Long is the Division of Criminal Investigation, or the DCI. The DCI, I just have a few of the many roles that they play in law enforcement in South Dakota. We have 45 agents, DCI agents, spread throughout the state. The DCI also engages in the Drug Task Force. Also, the State Forensic Laboratory, which does things like the analysis of DNA evidence, trace evidence, ballistics evidence, and also computer forensics. The high-intensity drug trafficking areas, or the HITDA, is a collaboration of our neighboring states, South Dakota, North Dakota, Iowa, Nebraska, Kansas, and Missouri. again, providing law enforcement resources to those high-intensity drug areas. The HITDA also provides for meth arrests. We also clean up meth labs that have been busted by our agents. Just a couple stats from that unit. In 2008, the Division of Criminal Investigation made 162 methamphetamine arrests. That encompasses 16 of our counties in South Dakota. They also seized around 38 pounds, not grams, not ounces, 38 pounds of methamphetamine were seized by the DCI. Also in 2008, six methamphetamine labs throughout the state were cleaned up by the high-intensity drug trafficking area section. So obviously meth remains a problem in our state, but the DCI is doing an incredibly efficient job in trying to get that situation under control. DCI also has an identification section. This is where you go for the criminal histories, the background checks on folks. Also, the identification section runs our sex offender registry. Internet crimes against children. Again, you look at our computer forensic investigators in that area. The intelligence unit of DCI engages in things like the Amber Alert system. Also engages in the investigation and assists in the prosecution of financial crimes. Law enforcement training provides basic certification for our law enforcement officers. Also engages in assisting with the DARE program. It also engages in providing training for not only the basic certification courses, but for all of our law enforcement who comes and gets refresher courses and things like that. Law enforcement training is in charge of that. And finally, the statistical analysis unit. And that unit keeps the crime statistics for both the state and federal governments. Keeps numbers on things like domestic violence offenses, DUIs, homicides, sexual assaults that occur in the state. So those are just nine responsibilities that are undertaken by the Division of Criminal Investigation. The director of DCI is Brian Gortmaker. The assistant director of the DCI is Trevor Jones. And we are very fortunate to have those two individuals as leading the charge for our DCI. The second objective that the Attorney General and I want to talk about this morning is recent legislation that's been passed by past judiciary committees and past legislatures. Sometimes I think that those of us who are engaged in the legislative process, both those of us who are writing the laws and you folks who are passing the laws, can sometimes get caught up in the passing of the legislation, and then maybe we forget about once July 1st comes around and these laws start to become implemented. And we just thought that it was important to give, especially the new members of the committee, an idea of how the decisions that you make as committee members and legislators have a real impact on the residents of South Dakota. The first piece of legislation that we want to talk about is known as Katie's Law. This was passed during last year's legislative session in 2008. It was Senate Bill 133. Senator Jay Dunwald from the Hoven area was the primary sponsor of the bill, and Senator Dunwald was kind enough to ask for our office's assistance in passing the bill. What Katie's Law does is we have had a DNA database in South Dakota for quite a few years, and the law used to be that any person who was convicted, and that's a key word, convicted of a qualifying offense. Qualifying offense is mainly a felony offense and some others. I could bore you with what a qualifying offense is, but if you really want to know, I'll get you the information later. But a qualifying offense, again, the old law is if a person was convicted of that qualifying offense. What Katie's Law did last year is that it took the language out that said before a person has to give a DNA sample to put in our DNA database, instead of that person requiring to be convicted, we now have in our law, and we are on the cutting edge in the United States in this change, any adult who is now arrested for a qualifying offense, again, primarily a felony offense, now has to submit during the booking process to a DNA sample. How that works is, and It was great last year because Senator Dunwald was here with the envelope that we actually do the DNA swabs with. Technology now has allowed us to simply take a swab, a Q-tip, take a sample from the inside of the individual's mouth. That's all we need. So actually, it's a less intrusive process than fingerprinting, obviously less intrusive than drawing blood, which is what the old technology required. Now we simply do it through a DNA swab that's put in the mouth. So the technology really now is incredible. For our law enforcement, obviously, if they do the DNA swabbing during the booking process, it becomes a very efficient way in which to get the DNA samples. So by switching from a conviction requirement to an arrest requirement, again, we're on the cutting edge in South Dakota in assisting law enforcement with getting these DNA samples. Katie's law was enacted on July 1st of 2008. It's SDCL 23-58-5.2. When I was here last year testifying for Katie's law, our projections would be that Katie's law would double each year the amount of DNA samples we had in our database. And I'm happy to say that that prediction is going to come true. Since July 1st of 2008, when Katie's law went into started just about 7 months ago now, our DCI has seen a 50% increase in the number of DNA samples that we have in our database, which is obviously an incredible tool for law enforcement to solve crimes here in South Dakota. It's an incredible tool. So we're very proud of that. It was a great piece of legislation, and for us to be on the cutting edge in South Dakota, I think is a great thing. I was asked last year during a committee session, how does Katie's law, how do these DNA databases and samples work in a real life situation? Let me give you an example. Many of you are probably familiar with the Carrie Nelson murder that happened. Carrie Nelson was murdered in May of 2001, and it happened right across our border in the Blue Mound State Park in Luverne, Minnesota. The investigation went on for several years. Obviously, having a murder of a young local gal in Luverne, Minnesota was a big deal. So this was a big case in that area. Unfortunately, based on the evidence that was collected by the Minnesota investigators, the investigation went cold for quite a long time. They just did not have enough evidence to find the person who killed Carrie Nelson. Another problem was the DNA that they found at the crime scene was what's termed a mixture. So it had different DNA in the samples and it was a mixture. Because of the mixture, Minnesota was not able to put that DNA sample into the national database. There's a huge national database, DNA database, that the entire country is tapped into. Because this particular case had a mixture, it couldn't be put in the database. Finally, there was a last-ditch effort by the state of Minnesota to try to solve Carrie Nelson's murder. And here's what they did. They sent the DNA profile that they had from the crime scene. They sent it to Minnesota's bordering states. That was done in the spring of 2007, about 6 years after Carrie Nelson was murdered. It was sent to Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Nebraska, North Dakota, and to us here in South Dakota. During that time, those states searched over 200,000 DNA profiles. We're happy to say that South Dakota was the one who had the match of the DNA sample. It was found in our South Dakota database. And it found that an individual by the name of Randy Swaney was the match. So the match that was the DNA found at the crime scene was ultimately, through technology, matched with Randy Swaney's DNA that we had here in our South Dakota database. Interesting thing about this is that Mr. Swaney was scheduled to be released from prison here in South Dakota. He was actually here in prison in South Dakota the very next week that the match occurred. He was in for an unrelated burglary conviction here in South Dakota, so he was 1 week away from being released from incarceration when South Dakota hit the match, the DNA database match. Ultimately, Mr. Swaney, based on the DNA evidence in large part, was convicted of Carrie Nelson's murder. And in August of 2008, he was given a mandatory life sentence in the state of Minnesota for Carrie Nelson's murder. So that is just one real-world example of how Katie's Law and DNA databases can be an incredible tool for law enforcement. And with Katie's Law, we believe that we are going to see those type of DNA matches in well into the future. So we thank you, especially the members of the committee who were here last year, for passing Katie's Law. We think it's a good thing, and we do sincerely thank you for that. And with that, I will turn it over to the Attorney General to talk about his 24/7 sobriety program.
Thank you. For those of you who are not acquainted with this program, House Bill 1072 was passed in, I believe, in the 2007 legislative session and was the authorization to take the 24/7 sobriety project statewide. The actual genesis of the program came about right after Governor Rounds was elected. He created a working group on corrections, and I was privileged to be part of that working group. And one of the things we were tasked to do was to try to get a handle on or think outside the box and come up with solutions, recommendations that might allow the governor's office to deal with the ever-increasing population in the Department of Corrections and the South Dakota Penitentiary. From 1996 through 2006, the average increase in the population in the state penitentiary had gone up by 152 people. And so in that 10-year period, the population had gone up by over 1,500. And the governor was concerned about this. So there was a substantial group of us who served on this committee. And one of the recommendations that, the committee made to the governor was to adopt what ultimately became the 24/7 Sobriety Project. When I was a local prosecutor in Bennett County, I noticed that time after time after time, we arrested the same people for a variety of sins, of crimes, but they were almost always connected by one thing in common, and that was that the defendant was either alcoholic or under the influence of alcohol at the time he did whatever it was he did that got him into trouble. And it didn't make any difference whether it was drunk driving or spouse abuse or burglary or rape or forging documents or theft. It was always alcohol related. And the other thing I noticed was it was always repeat business. We dealt with the same people time after time after time. And after several years of this, the sheriff and I decided that the only way we could figure out to keep these people sober was to keep them in jail. And of course, that's not a very attractive way to do it, and it's an expensive and time-consuming way. The other thing we figured out was that by and large, if we could keep these people sober, they were pretty good citizens. They were not in a lot of trouble. We didn't have to arrest them. The challenge was to keep them sober and keep them out of jail at the same time. And so what we did was we experimented with the idea of placing them out on bond or placing them on probation or some circumstance where they were outside of the jail, but at the same time requiring them to abstain from the use of alcohol and monitoring them. And the way we did that was, as a bond condition or a condition of probation, we would require them to come to the sheriff's office twice a day, about 7 a.m. in the morning and 7 p.m. in the evening, and take the breath test. And if they showed up and blew a clean test, they were free to go until the next test. But if they skipped the test, we would go get them and incarcerate them. And if they failed the test, we would simply walk them across the hall and put them in jail. And what we discovered was that we got extremely high rates of compliance. There would be about two dozen people queue up in front of the sheriff's office every morning, and they would come in, and the dispatcher would administer the PBT test to them. We used the little bitty portable breath test units like the Highway Patrol carries, and almost without exception, everybody would show up and everybody would pass. And And it was really gratifying to see the change in these people. I mean, people who'd been drinking for 15 or 20 years regularly, people I grew up with, you could, after about 30 days of sobriety, you could see the physical change. The ones that were overweight lost weight, and the ones that were skinny gained weight, and the color would change. And it was just really dynamic and kind of refreshing. We ran this program in Bennett County until I came to the Attorney General's office and got into some other duties. But one of the things I noticed as the Deputy Attorney General was that what was going on in Bennett County was pretty typical of South Dakota. Every county had the same problems. They arrested the same people time after time for the same problems, and they were all alcohol or drug related. So I suggested to the committee that perhaps some variation on this program would be useful to try to separate a chronic alcoholic defendant from his addiction and get him out of the system, so we didn't have to arrest him the third time or the fourth time or the fifth time, and we didn't have to appoint counsel for him, and we didn't have to incarcerate him, and we didn't have to have a jury trial for him and then put him in the penitentiary. So the recommendation was made. In February of 2005, I found some National Highway Traffic Safety Administration money, and I convinced the sheriff in Minnehaha County and the sheriff in Pennington County and the sheriff in Tripp County and some judges in each of those counties to kind of jump into this experiment with me. And they said, Larry, you're going to fill the jails. And I said, I don't think so. And they said, you're going to fill the court dockets. And I said, I don't think that'll happen either, but bear with me. And so I kind of begged them and groveled, and they agreed to do it. And of course, what happened was what I predicted would happen, and that is that we started with people who were convicted or who were arrested for DUI and had at least one prior conviction in the last 10 years, which qualifies them for enhanced punishment. And as we started to do this, we saw in these three counties the same results that we had seen in Bennett County, and that is these people by and large began to stay sober. And as the judges saw this, they began to talk to each other, and by word of mouth through the judges, this became a popular program. Well, by January of 07, we had 12 counties participating. We had about 65% of the state population who was subject to being placed in the program if they were arrested, and so we brought House Bill 1072, and I'm gratified yet that the legislature passed it and funded it, and so what we have now, effective July 1 of 07, is a program which is pretty much statewide, and really we believe this is it's an alternative to incarceration. And what we provide for the courts is a variety of methods of testing for alcohol to assure that the defendant is staying sober, either by testing him twice a day or in rare circumstances by wearing a bracelet which tests his alcohol consumption once an hour. And those are available pretty much statewide. The judges really demanded that we also provide some level of testing for drugs other than alcohol, and we have tried to do that. We do that in two fashions. Urinalysis, people who are being tested for drugs don't have to come in twice a day because the drugs stay in their system a little longer, so you can usually test them about twice a week, and that will be sufficient. But urinalysis is available in some counties, and for the folks who don't, the sheriff's offices who don't want to or don't feel they're capable of providing urinalysis, we use a drug patch. It's like a big Band-Aid. You wear it on your arm. It collects the emissions from your sweat glands for a period of about 7 to 10 days, and then that patch is sent into a lab for analysis. And so about every 10 days you get a readout on what drugs this particular individual has been taking. And that has worked out very well. So why don't we go to the next slide here.
I hate to interrupt you. You probably can hear the clamoring out in the hall. The caucus has requested the use of this room shortly, and so.
How much time do I have, Madam Chair?
How much time do you need?
I'll run through this very quickly.
Okay, thank you, and I hate to rush you along.
That's right. Okay. I tell you what, why don't you go to this slide? Okay. Let me give you a little background about how dominant alcohol and drugs are in the criminal justice system. From FY79 through FY07, there were 24,640 felonies of all types in South Dakota. These are felony convictions, okay? 8,600 of those were directly related to DUI felonies, okay? That's slightly more than one out of three. And go to the next slide. To give you an idea, the next most commonly committed felony in South Dakota is possession of a controlled substance, which is usually methamphetamine, and that's 27.2%. And so between alcohol and drugs, 59.9% of all the felonies in South Dakota are the direct result of the defendant consuming alcohol or consuming illegal drugs. That's 6 out of 10. The next slide talks about Class 1 and Class 2 misdemeanors. On average, there's about 22,000 to 25,000 Class 1 misdemeanor filings every year in South Dakota. Roughly half of those are drunk drivers. And that's how dominant alcohol is in our system. We deal with the same people time after time for the same reasons. Now, in terms of our 24/7 sobriety project, as of last month, we had processed over 10,000 people through our program. We've administered over 1.7 million examinations. Those people show up and pass over 99% of the time, and that's a lot of sobriety, folks. Our bracelets, we have over 1,100 people who've worn bracelets or are currently wearing bracelets. We test those people an average of 106 days, which is slightly over 3 months. Our success rate there is 82%. So over 80 out of 100 people who wear the bracelets have perfect attendance. They never drink. They don't cut the bracelet off. They stay in compliance. We keep them sober. Our urinalysis, we've tested over 1,000 of those people. Our success rate there is 97%. These people are staying off drugs. Keep going. And our drug patch is less popular, but again, about 93% of the time, those people are staying off drugs for that 10-day period doing their test. And I want to say this. The reason this works is because these people are being held accountable. Some judge has told them, don't drink or you're going to jail, or don't use drugs and you're going to jail. We provide the accountability. The example I like to use is an electric fence. Okay? You know, we don't provide a severe punishment, but we provide an immediate punishment and something that stings just enough so you know enough not to touch the fence again. And if you have some more time and you need this, need more detail, I'd be delighted to provide it. We're sorry we're over time.
Thank you, General Long. And actually, you know, you aren't over time. They were pushing us, but they've moved to the next room.
Oh.
So I'd like to, while we have you here, if there are committee members that have any questions for you or if there was something else you wanted to tell us about it, we would take a few more minutes to do that. I do want to acknowledge that General Long and the Attorney General's Office won the Innovations Award from the Conference of State Legislatures from CSG. And he also was kind enough to come out to the National Conference of State Legislatures and present to the Law and Justice Committee of NCSL. So that's why we wanted you to know about this program. It's an effective program and one that has gained certainly national attention for what we've been able to do. And it was the General's idea with the assistance of the legislature that did that. So these are the kind of things we can do in the work in this committee. And we appreciate the update from your office, given the fact that you're often with us here in Judiciary. So do the members of the committee have any questions for the office? Any questions? Representative Mosier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to point out very quickly while I had the Attorney General here that I personally know more than a handful of individuals who have participated in the 24/7 program, and all of them, to the best of my knowledge, have been very successful in the program and have seen significant turnarounds in their lives. So I just wanted to make that comment while you were here.
Thank you, Representative Mosher. Any other questions or comments from the committee?
I have one.
Representative Hoffman.
I have one question, and it would be for people who are, let's say, addicted to methamphetamines, cocaine, other drugs, do you work with a doctor, a physician, that can give them a prescription for, there's pills that help people quit nicotine addiction, and I've heard from some doctors that they work really well for getting people off of the meth craze that they're on. I don't know whether that's physically possible to do very easily, but that's my question.
General Long.
Representative Hoffman, there are drugs available to assist people in overcoming their addiction to alcohol. I'm not as familiar with the drugs that are available for methamphetamine and other hard drugs, but we do not perceive ourselves as a substitute for treatment. We fully expect that during the course of the criminal justice process that these people are in, that the judge is going to either mandate or encourage that they go to some type of treatment over and above what we provide. We have been willing to look at other technologies other than the ones that we are currently using to try to fill some gaps. For example, some of the people who participate in our twice-a-day testing program try to beat us by drinking between events and drinking in moderate amounts so they can pass the test the next day. I've stumbled across a test that I think I can use to limit their successfulness on that. And in fact, I've got a bill in front of appropriations. If I can get a little money, I'm going to buy a couple of those and see if I can discourage them from doing that. But we kind of like the technology that's out there, and if there are drugs out there that would be beneficial, we would be happy to look at them.
Thank you, committee members. We'll close to questions at this time. We will have the Attorney General and Mr. Swear and at times Mr. McWiggin and others from the office available. And I'm sure if any of you have further questions about this program or other matters that they discussed today, I'm sure they'd be happy to discuss those further with you too. And we look forward to seeing more of you throughout the legislative session. Thank you so much for coming and being with us this morning.
Appreciate your time.
With that, committee members, we will get on to our other matters for today. I expect that we'll have a longer committee hearing on Friday. So thank you for your attention this morning. With that, the chair would entertain a motion to adjourn. Moved by Turbeville, seconded by Hunt. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? We are adjourned.